All right, here we go. The mayor is here in Studio 4. Good morning, everybody. Welcome aboard the John Gambling Show Friday edition. And good morning and welcome, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning, John. We have a guest here.
We do.
Lexi Kellert, who is a student at Emory College in Atlanta, Georgia, but comes from New York, which is why she's here. And she's always been a fan of yours, says even before she was born, she was thinking about you.
You are such
your father and your grandfather.
Such the politician.
I had to explain to her who the hell you were.
Lexi,
but
I understand. That's exactly what you were doing when she came in. She is an intern following around finishing up her stay.
She has done yeoman's work for the city. And so
and got paid even less than you.
Yes, hard to do, but she's doing it. And
right.
You have a good week.
I've had a very good week. You certainly had a busy one, and I'm not even sure where we should start.
Yes, there was a poem about starting at the beginning.
The king
said you start at the beginning and you end at the end. Or
I
something
don't know
like
if we
that.
Want to start with the, sort of the sad the shootings up in Harlem.
You know, it's one guy brings a gun. And one guy's dead. Those two things are clear. Once again, another thing that's clear is our police officers' lives were put on the line to stop what could have been an awful lot worse and protect the people. There's just no place for guns on the streets of big cities. And illegal guns, you know, this is just an outrage. There's a dispute as to who, but some people say the guy that brought the gun was the guy that got shot because the other guy had a fight with him and grabbed his gun. I don't know if that's true or not.
Under investigation.
The cops started shooting when the gun was pointed at them. That's what they're supposed to do. You know, the police department will look at everything, and you always look to see whether you could do a better job. But I went to visit one of the two cops who was shot. The other one just had a little piece of shrapnel in his hand. But the one I went to visit talked to him and his wife. Fortunately, his bulletproof vest took the bullet, and he, you know, showed me where the bruise under it. But a bruise is a heck of a lot better than a bullet entering.
Absolutely so. And again, this comes down, and I know this is not only a theme of yours, but a theme of mayors across this country, that the national picture has to change.
Look, nothing wrong with the Second Amendment. It's the Constitution. I used to have a rifle. I was a big target shooter. If you want to carry guns and your state allows it, you comply with the law, that's fine. But the federal laws say criminals can't have guns and kids can't have guns. And then Congress doesn't let us enforce the law. They always put impediments in the ways of getting the information that our police departments need. And the reason the mayors always speak out on this is at a state level or a federal level, they don't see it. You know, Congress, who sits there and defends the right to carry and all that sort of stuff, they don't allow guns into Congress. So it's okay for you to go to a workplace in many states where you can carry a gun in a workplace, but not where the legislators are.
Now, again, you can't protect against this necessarily because about the guy in Connecticut that unfortunately killed those eight people. Now, he had those guns legally. They were not illegal guns.
There are some murders done with legal guns, but generally speaking, almost all of the guns that you find at crime scenes are illegal. Congress is just unwilling to face the issue. And you say, well, you know, you need a disaster, a Virginia Tech, before they'll pay attention. Well, number one, they didn't pay attention after the last Virginia Tech. And number two, we have a Virginia Tech every day in this country. There are roughly 32 people, the same number of people that were killed at Virginia Tech, that are killed across this country with illegal handguns every day. But we don't pay any attention to it. Why? Because it's one in this city, one in that city, one in the other city, and it's not good theater. You're not going to bother to talk about it on your radio show. The press isn't going to put it on the front page. Remember all of the press
That's 200 plus people a week.
It's a
10,000 people a year.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, it makes 9/11. You know, puts it. It's in the order of magnitude of a 9/11 every year. It's really just unbelievable.
And little gets done about it. I know you guys fight for it.
I'm trying to think, is it 32 a day or a week?
Okay.
You got to check. I got to go back.
I'm
starting to think maybe it's even more.
Before we are finished here, you were up at the Willis Avenue Bridge. I thought that was amazing the way they did that.
The old span's going out the same way.
Is it? They're going to float it out?
We're going to pick it up, put it on our barge, and float it over to New Jersey, and all of the metal gets recycled.
I was going to say, you're not going to dump it in New Jersey.
We're not going to dump it in New Jersey. Yeah, there's a place there that wants the business of cutting it. Right, sure. While at the same time most states and cities are complaining about they need federal monies to revamp their infrastructure, that's all falling apart. Pennsylvania, everything is falling apart. The governor of Pennsylvania is a great guy, Ed Rendell, and he always talks about all the bridges in Pennsylvania falling apart. In New York City, and I can't speak for New York State, but in New York City, we have something like 800 bridges. You don't think there's that many?
There are,
because there's lots of small ones.
Canals.
Sure, and there's, you know, an old river with a bridge over it, and you don't pay any attention to it.
You don't see the river much.
Right, sure. And out of the 800, now that the Willis Avenue Bridge is finally being done, there is only one substandard bridge, and it is one ramp onto the Brooklyn Bridge, and we are redoing that. If you remember, I did an event with Jeanette Seta Khan, the Transportation Commissioner, and Joe Biden, the Vice President, about 3 or 4 months ago when the federal government's giving us. Federal government's paying for part of it, and we're paying for the balance of it. But the city has reached into its pockets, yours, mine, everybody else who lives here and works here, and we have redone virtually every bridge, brought the maintenance up to speed. In some cases, like the Willis Avenue, totally replaced it. And we've done it with our own money. So, you know, New York City doesn't have the problem. And then when we come, federal government talks about, well, we've got to help everybody. I keep thinking to myself, you know, we reached into our pockets. We did it ourselves. And then everybody else says, oh, you know, there's high taxes in New York. Come to where we are. Leave New York. No. You know, New Yorkers understand we can't sit around and wait. We've got to do it. And if you're going to do it, somebody's got to pay. And nobody likes taxes. Nobody likes the capital budget that you're going to eventually have to pay back. But either you want the services. And what I've never been willing to do is to say we'll wait for federal monies. If we need something, we need it now. There's this business. The federal government, John, it's interesting. They don't pay for something you already have. If you need a hazmat truck, okay?
Don't go buy one.
Don't go buy one because then they won't pay for it. Wait, and they'll give you the money to buy it. Well, I don't know how to look the public in the eye and say, you know, I didn't buy that hazmat truck because we're waiting for the money, and I'm sorry, you're dead.
But
you can't do that. I mean, that's just not...
Do you think that we are going to get back to, and this is sort of a generic, not necessarily city question, but are we going to get back to the responsibility? Because as long as the federal government continues to throw money, whether it be states, other institutions, to prop them up for bad management, we'll never get good management.
Well, yes, I think you're... it's easy to say the good old days. You say get back to. I mean, the good old days were never the good old days. The corruption in government used to be a heck of a lot worse. In New York City, go back to the Boss Tweed days. Yes, the federal government didn't bail you out, but there was a lack of responsibility back then. They just borrowed and that sort of thing. I do think that we have – it's a good question in terms of the bill that was just passed, the Medicaid extension called FMAP. I was certainly in favor of it. We need the money, and they had promised it to us, so we had it in our budget, so I was pleased when they put it in. If they had not told us we were going to get it originally, we would have found other ways to accommodate, either reducing our expenses even more, which some things would be good. The things that the other guy needs, you would be in favor of. The things you need, you wouldn't be in favor of. Or we would have found other revenue sources. Those could be fees, fines, charges, or the dread three-letter word, taxes. But the real issue with the FMAP money was the uncertainty. Then there is, however, this teacher's bill. And the teacher's bill is a bill that is going to give some money to save teachers' jobs. But there are a lot of restrictions on what you can use the money for. We're still trying to sort it out. It goes to the states. So everybody thinks we're going to get a few $100 million. It's $500 million to go to New York State. How much we're going to get of that depends on what our state legislature does. And if you notice recently, they've been chopping us a lot more than the rest of the state, I would argue, because the rest of the state, the assembly and senate seats are in contention. And in New York City, it's overwhelmingly one party, and even if you lose, the next guy would be probably from the same party. So that's my theory as to why we get less service, although you can question whether our assembly members and senators are doing the job of bringing home the bacon for us. And I'm not embarrassed to say it. This job is to make sure New York City gets treated fairly. And the last set of last budget, the state cut our revenue sharing, which is the basic ways they give us money, by 100%, and they cut the other rest of the state by 3 or 4%.
Okay, so you don't think you're going to get much of the 500?
Well, I don't know, but we have, for example, in our city budget, we have $800 million of stimulus money we're using for teachers this year. That money's not going to be there next year. So we start out next year, and I've spent another meeting yesterday. We've got to start working on how we address next year's budget, even though it's only 10 and a half months. It's still 10 and a half months away. And that's why one of the reasons I brought in Steve Goldsmith, who's, you know, really been focusing on how do we, and will over the next few weeks, start to announce things, combining motor pools and computer rooms and HR and purchasing and things like that, because we just can't keep spending the money. We're not going to have it.
All right. I'll take a break. When we come back, more with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. And, of course, your questions before we finish at 800-321-0710. You better get in the queue right now. Get up front first and get in with your question at 800-321-0710, 19 minutes after 8 o'clock. All right, we continue 23 minutes now after 8. Mayor Michael Bloomberg again.
You know, John, I just wanted to say one thing. I'm heading, we were talking about the cops putting their lives on the line. Later this morning, I'm lucky enough to, honored to be able to speak at a plaque dedication for a firefighter who died a year ago named Paul Warhola. The fire department has a tradition when a firefighter dies in the line of duty, 1 year later, they put up a plaque on the wall of the firehouse. This happens to be engine 221, ladder 104, so they have both vehicles in the same building. And, you know, it just reminds you the number of people who put their lives on the line so that you and I can sit here and babble on.
Absolutely so. Thank the good Lord for those people that do it on an each and every day basis. Let's see here.
Tourism you wanted to talk about.
Well, no,
I want to brag.
You know what? You bragged here last week about that. Then you held your press conference, and Joe Bartlett yesterday is going on and on about the mayor and his tourism. And I said, he said that here last Friday. Why was it a big deal yesterday and not a big deal last Friday?
Well, you know, at a lot of these events I go to where everybody speaks, I always joke that everything's been said by not by everybody. In this case, it's been said by everybody, but not often enough.
Okay.
I mean, as you think about it, we have 8,000 new hotel rooms between last year and this year, 7,500 of them this year, and hotel occupancy is up almost 7%. It's amazing. Tourism, we're on record. We're going to record year this year when there's this international recession. Why is it good? It's because of your show. People around the world listen to you, John.
Stop. Even Broadway,
record ticket sales.
They're happy.
I think I said this to you about a month and a half ago, because Rebney, the real estate organization, put out the study. Retail rents, storefronts, on Broadway, 7th Avenue, 6th Avenue, like Times Square and Herald Square, that whole area, up 70%. Store owners were worried about closing traffic because nobody could get to the front door. Rents are up 70% because the foot traffic is fueling all these businesses.
Is the restaurant business as healthy?
I try to eat out in a different restaurant every night in the city, in a different borough. And you'd be very hard-pressed to find a restaurant. Well, I'm sure there's some, but doesn't say business is better. A lot of them say May was the best May they've ever had. I had breakfast yesterday with a bunch of people from Washington Heights, mostly Dominicans, some Jewish. It was Jewish. When I first came to New York, it was in April of 1942. My parents came down. I was 3 months old to visit a cousin I had who lived at 181st and Cabrini Boulevard. It was all Jewish then. Today, still, Yeshiva University has a branch up there. There was a guy at the table, an Irish bar in a Jewish and Dominican neighborhood, only in New York. But he said, and there was another guy who had two restaurants there, Dominican food, and both said business a lot better. Yeah, it's not just tourism. In New York City, restaurant business is good. Stores are better. There's still plenty of stores that are empty, We're not back to the boom times, but it stopped getting worse, and in many neighborhoods is getting better.
All right. My next question is, the decision is state, but it is in New York City. I'm talking about this Racino thing over at Aqueduct. And some are saying that this could lead to casino gambling, full casino gambling in New York.
Maybe, but I don't see how they can do it, because the state constitution, I think, prohibits gambling. And you say, what about slot machines? Aha. You've never looked at the back of a slot machine in New York. They're not slot machines. They are lottery machines.
Like video terminals.
Right. When you pull the lever on the one-armed bandit, the wheels go around, but it doesn't depend on the wheels. There's a signal sent out to a computer that conducts a lottery, sends back whether you wins or not, and then lines up the wheels. Now, maybe you and I couldn't tell the difference, but somebody as smart as Lexi could. That it is another example of government saying one thing and doing another, because lotteries are legal in the state, but gambling is not. And then we say the monies go to education,
which is
total bull, because they just take that. Yeah, they send that money to education. Right. They take the other money away. I mean,
senior citizens and education. That's the banner that's always
absolutely.
It never happens, but they can change the law.
If it's in the Constitution, that's not easy to do. That would take a long time.
Oh, it's in the Constitution.
I think so. You better, in the state constitution, that gambling's illegal, but lotteries are not. If it's a law, it's easy. They could do it.
Right. And then the other back doorway is through the Shinnecock Indians or
well,
some
that's
other.
Well, that's still controversial. Stuff, if it's on an Indian reservation, Indian reservations are technically not part of the United States. They're independent countries because of treaties signed back when. Although some state laws apply, we're having a battle, or the governor's having a battle, as all governors have in New York, about cigarettes, bootleg cigarettes going through Indian reservations. And there was an article today in the Buffalo News, which I know you read all the time.
Every, don't miss it.
There's one of the state laws is trying to stop the reservation from selling cigarettes by using the U.S. mails. And the Indians sued, and the judge said, no, it's legal, and the appeals court said it's legal. But this will be a battle played out. And I think the story is that there was some tires burnt in the middle of one of the upstate superhighways in New York.
Yeah, I think it was the New York State Thruway. This goes back in the Pataki administration.
And the Indians said, you know, we're going to shut down the roads if you don't let us continue to sell cigarettes without taxes. Now, why every governor? I said that to David Patterson. I said, you know, get yourself a cowboy hat and a shotgun. If there's ever a great video, it's you standing in the middle of the New York State Thruway saying, you know, read my lips. The law of the land is this, and we're going to enforce the law. But the just think about
the federal government came in, because I've talked to the governor about it. The federal government came in and basically called and said, don't do it. That's what they said.
You want to show me that letter?
Well, I didn't see the letter, but that's the word.
Then you do it and let the federal government sue us. This is an outrage, you know. If you and I have to pay taxes, everybody should pay taxes, and this is just a scam to get around the taxes. And incidentally, they say, well, if you start taxing, it'll cost a few jobs. Yeah, the cigarettes are killing our people.
Now, to that, the taxes on cigarettes in New York City are going up. A pack costs $10 or $11,
yep,
whatever it is. And the word is that the cigarette smokers are going elsewhere.
I'm sure there's some, but the fact of the matter is when you do this, cigarette smoking goes down and fewer people die. Life expectancy, all you got to do is look at one number. Life expectancy in New York City has gone up 1 year and 7 months in the last 8 years. You are living over a year and a half longer because of lower deaths, and a big chunk of that is smoking cessation. It's lower murder rate. It's better focus on traffic accidents and fires and that sort of thing. Yeah, it's always going to be somebody who goes across the border, and the anti-tax people say, see. Yeah, most people don't. You know what it costs to take your car, pay the tolls, go over to New Jersey or to buy a pack of cigarettes? Come on. Handful of people will do it. Okay.
All right, Mr. Mayor, let's take our half-hour break. Joe Bartlett's waiting in the wings here. It's 8:31, coming right back. We continue 23 before 9. It is a Friday. Happy Friday to you all. And let's see here. We got, what, two lines open. Well, one and a half. Well, we now have one left. 800-321-0710. If you've got a question for Mayor Bloomberg, 800-321-0710. There's a story here about school grading and the actual grading of individual schools here in the city based on all sorts of things. Yep. And now they're going to add another criteria, which I thought was interesting, and I couldn't believe it hadn't been part of it before, and that is how kids are prepared for college when they graduate through Regents and math and
English. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's what you want to do is you want to know how good the school is, because if you're going to send your kid there. You want to know how much the school is improving if you want to incent the people who work there. If you think about it, it's very different. You don't want somebody to say, I'm not going to go to a poor school because I won't get paid as much. Quite the contrary. You want to attract the best teachers to go to the schools that really need the help and have the biggest pedagogical challenges. And so a school that is terrible, but they make it better, you want to really say, hey, great job. You're going in the right direction. Keep it going.
This is a great thing. But
this is another one of those things. Yeah.
But isn't this the ultimate grade? I mean,
no, because there are lots of other things. You know, listen, not all kids go to college.
But don't we expect that a senior in any school should have a certain proficiency?
I wish we were at that level. I mean, the bottom line is we're starting. You know, if you read all these stories about when the state changed the what is proficient definition, our test scores didn't go down. The test scores have been going up on this national NAEP test and on the tests that we take here that are given throughout the state. And there's no argument about our schools improving. Somebody from the Manhattan Institute wrote a column today in either the Post or the News saying exactly that. Whether the tests are easier or harder, all the kids in the state take the same test. So if we improve versus the rest of the state, our teachers are doing the right thing. And you want to keep that progress going. But we're a long ways from getting every kid a high school diploma. High school diploma is no longer the holy grail. It used to be if you couldn't get a high school diploma, you have a chance to enter middle class. Today, probably you could say it's a two-year junior college would be the level to enter middle class. And in a few years, it's going to be a four-year degree. We can't get all the kids to get a high school diploma. Then the question is, how good is the high school diploma? Because a lot of the colleges say when kids get there, they need
remedial
work.
Right.
So what they did when they changed the proficiency thing, all of a sudden they showed, oh, a lot of kids didn't make it. Yeah, because we have worked so hard to move kids from level 2 into level 3. Where are they in level 3? They're not at the top of level 3. They're at the bottom of level 3, but they are improving. So if all of a sudden you redefine the boundary between 2 and 3 and you move it up, all those kids didn't make level 3 anymore, and everybody says, oh, the schools aren't improving. That's just total bull. We are going in the right direction, and God help us if we don't stay the course and keep doing it. And these critics just, you know, you wonder whether they just don't understand, because when they say the tests are harder, easier, but if everybody takes the same test in the state, and over the last 4 years in fourth grade math and English and in eighth grade math, we really have statistically moved up much in the national tests, these NAEP tests, much more than all the other big cities. So are we where we want to be? No. And it's really worrisome. Will we ever get there? I hope so. We've just got to keep working. But as fast as we are helping kids, the standards required to really be able to succeed in life keep going up. And it's going up. The high school diplomas have to be made harder to get. We're doing that, but that's more of a challenge. Junior colleges have to be able to take more kids, and four-year colleges have to be able to take more kids. And what do you do when it's beyond 4 years, when you're going to need a master's of some sort?
And in many industries, you've got to have that master's. And
we are in this. You have to have a high school diploma to work in our sanitation department. You have to have a lot of college credits for a fire department or police department. You know, is there any chance in the foreseeable future of our education system in this country being able to give everybody a four-year college degree? I don't think so. We're still struggling two levels below that. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't keep going. And, you know, you just You got to have hope. And are we making progress? Yes. And you want to make sure. One of the dangers, if you constantly criticize, is that people who give it their all and make some progress throw their hands up and say, nobody cares. The heck with this. I'm into something else. And we're trying to attract people into public service. My job is to make sure they understand that we do recognize the sacrifice. They don't make as much money as in the private sector. In some cases they do. We've got to recognize that they are working in a very tough thing. If there were simple solutions to complex problems like education, we would have done a long time ago. So, you know, the teachers and principals and school safety officers and custodians, everybody that's working at public schools, they are doing a phenomenal job. Every one of them? Of course not. We have about 120,000 people that work for the Department of Ed, 80,000 teachers, 2,000 principals, whatever it is. But they are making a lot of progress.
You appointed a charter commission to review the city charter, and they're talking term limits. We know about that. They're talking about nonpartisan elections.
Well, they decided no nonpartisan elections. I've always thought nonpartisan elections are desperately needed here. Every other big city has them, and even New York City has them for special elections. But a lot of the vested interests don't want them because it would be more competition for them. And some people say, well, it wouldn't be good for minorities. The truth of the matter is, elsewhere we have nonpartisan elections, minorities do as well, if not better, because you don't have to work your ways up through the local party machinery to get there. But in any case, you know, this is what I spent $7 million on my own money back when. We'll have to fight it another day. It is a great idea because most people in this city, a vast majority of people, don't have a vote. They think they do, but they don't have a vote for mayor because it's already decided in the primary. And Rudy and I and me, we're aberrations.
Aren't there other things that should be looked at by a charter commission other than just the term limits?
I think so. But in all fairness, this commission, which I appointed, which is supposed to be independent, and it is independent, we provide some guidance. It's a city commission. You have the mayor creates it, and you have a right to do it. But they did hearings, a lot of hearings. They spent an enormous amount of time on this, the members of the commission, giving their time pro bono to the city. And they had hearings in all five boroughs and again and again and again. And they listened to a lot of suggestions. And then they looked at which things they thought had some real public support. And they came up with a list of some things. I think you could have done other things and put it on it, but I'm not going to second guess them. And there's nothing to say we can't have another commission for next year or the year after or the year after that.
What did you make of the governor's offer to the mosque about looking for a different location and their rejection of that?
The issue is not the location. The issue is, should the government be involved in telling people who they can pray to, how they pray, where they can pray? Government shouldn't be involved in this. And I didn't understand the governor's offer because I thought the law was you can't give away state property without having it open to everybody. And I guarantee you the courts are right away saying you're going to give it to
religious. He said it was not state property necessarily. It was going to help them find another location.
The governor really does try to make our lives better. But this doesn't – probably not the number one expertise that he has is in site selection is nice ways to put it.
You've taken a lot of heat over this.
Quite the contrary. Nothing. I've just – in my whole life, I've always thought that the thing that I'm most proud of is smoking cessation because 1 billion people are going to die unless we do something about it this century. This one – the best letter I got was from a guy who is president of a firm that lost 70-odd people in the World Trade Center site. And he sent me a two-line email. He said, I'm so sad that you had to make the speech, and I'm so glad that you did. And that was the nicest email maybe I've ever gotten in my life. It's great that people say, oh, you stand up for what you believe. Some senses, I guess, you know, why are they surprised? That thought always occurs to me. Oh, my goodness. They really didn't think. I'd like to think I do all the time.
I had the same, and some people say to me, it's nice to see somebody who, you know, who doesn't always go with the flow all the time. But that's just the way I approach life, and obviously you do too.
You got to like what you see in the mirror. You got to know I did it right. And I've listen, I've been out there criticizing people, not on this issue, but on lots of issues, leading from the back. You know, there's the old joke, the politician says, tell me where you want to go and I'll lead you there. That's not what you should be doing. And I got a very nice note from one of the most senior senators in Washington yesterday. I wouldn't give his name out with him unless I'd asked him. I hadn't called him, saying congratulations, thank you for standing up. You know, it was nice. And the State Department took my speech and translated it into Arabic and Hindi and sent it out, I saw.
Somebody really,
said, yeah, because it's, you know, you want, that's, America stands for openness and freedom, and that's why 9/11 happened. Because these people found the openness and the freedom to pray, to have a vote, to be in charge of your own destiny, to basically do whatever you want to do as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else. That's fundamentally what democracy is all about. And I can't tell you it's perfect, but fundamentally it is. And that's why America was founded. And I said in my speech something effective, you know, the firefighters that went into those buildings and gave their lives, they didn't go in and say, excuse me, what's your religion? Before they tried to save it, they just went in. And wouldn't it be a shame if the result of, or instead of thanking them and doing defending what they gave their lives for, we went in the other direction? That's what I don't get. And the families that I have talked to of 9/11 victims, I can't tell you, I don't remember. Only one, I think, did not think it was a good idea, and I talked to him. I don't know that I convinced this woman or not, but the others, I mean, just, you know, keep it up. You're the right thing. This is what I'd want for my son or my daughter.
All right, different subject completely. MTA token booths closing down. What have you been told about the health of the MTA? I mean, and where we're going to find ourselves in the fall?
You got the right guy running this place. Jay Wallner is the right guy. The state's not giving him any money. He's got to balance his budget because otherwise he can't pay anybody. The union is fighting him tooth and nail, but there's no more money, and he can only raise fares so much. There will be a fare increase, but we still, even, we'll get a fare increase. We'll keep most of the buses and subways running. But, you know, we're not investing in the security things. We're not that we should. We're not investing in the expansion of bus routes the way we should. We're not investing in the kinds of technologies that will let the existing equipment carry more people, signaling and those kinds of things. I come back to, I hate to, this is a broken record, but 5 or 6 years ago, city came up with a plan to get the money so we could do all those things. Albany legislature said, no, we got a better idea, and the silence is deafening.
Okay. All right, let me take a break, and when we come back, the silence will be broken by your questions. We got a full bank of phones here, and so we will come right back, 10 before 9 o'clock.
While there's still some summer left, try a
6 now before 9 o'clock.
Before you go to the first call,
yes.
I had doubts, and I was wrong, but then I thought about it, and I was right. It's 34 murders a day in this country with illegal handguns, which is, you know, 3 9/11s a year in this country, and nobody cares.
And nobody, just awful. All right, let's go to the phone and see what's on the minds of everybody. Going to start with line number 5, and that is Paula. Hello, Paula. You got the mayor.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good.
I'm calling about the FDNY test, the most recent test that right now is on a freeze.
Yep.
My son took the test, and he should be in the 300 class right now, but he is not being hired. And I know that there was a recent hearing on Wednesday, and what I am hearing is that the candidates will be picked randomly instead of according to score. And I'm just wondering how that is even legal. I mean, my son has gone through everything the right way. He's been through the public school system. He went to a community college. He's not privileged in any way. We did not send him to tutors. He did not have any extra tutoring for this test. The only thing he did was do the right thing. He went to school. He studied for the test. He drove to the test. He wasn't picked up by a bus. He wasn't given any other privileges. And he now is not going to be hired because we're going to pick random numbers. And my, the mayor, according to the civil service law, is that even legal?
Paula, we don't think so. The judge thinks yes is a nice way to phrase it. We in the city believe that the test is fair and appropriate to the job. You want, and you, the way I phrase it is, I'm in a fire and there's somebody that's going to come through that door to save me. I want them to be the smartest person and have adequate strength. Smartest is important because you never know what you're going to find on the other side of that door, particularly in this day and age of terrorism and biohazards and all of that sort of stuff. We think the test is valid. The way the test works is everybody takes it. You start at the top and you go down the list. And if we want 300, you probably have to offer the job to 400 or 450 because some, after they took the test, took other jobs and then decided they didn't want to do it. But anyways, it's basically the people at the top. The judge says no, that the fire department's not as diverse as it should be. If you look at the people on the list, even on the 300, it is much more diverse than it used to be. And I know Nick Scapetta used to work on this all the time. We tried to get more people to apply and really wanted to, because you want the city's workforce to be the best. And the more diversity you can pick from, the more, the better the quality is going to be. Anyways, the judge says no. What the judge, I don't want to oversimplify it, but the judge wants to say is, look, let's say the top third, whatever the number is, it doesn't make any difference whether you're at the top of that third or the bottom of that third. It's all the same. They're all qualified. Therefore, we should pick from that list randomly. Or if you still don't have enough diversity, not sure the judge has gone there yet, but he seems to imply that you have to go deliberately and get diversity. Now, whether or not he'll rule that way or not, I don't know. We're waiting to see. We will appeal this judge's ruling, but we've got to wait until he, I think it might even be next week, he's got to make his decision on what the remedy should be, and then we can appeal. We know his decision not to use the test, and we can't hire the 300, and that instead of the 300, we've got to use overtime. It's very expensive, and if we spend money on overtime for the fire department, it means fewer teachers, fewer cops, fewer everything else. I mean, just there's only X number of dollars, and so we're fighting it. But Paula, you know, your son did play by the rules, it sounds like, and I hope he gets a chance to join the greatest fire department in the world. But it's up to the judge. You can rest assured the city will fight this all the ways. And if we lose, then we have no choice but to follow the law. But I think the judge is wrong. I think the guy that's at the top or the woman that's at the top of the top group is better suited for the job than the person who's at the bottom of that group, no matter where the cutoff is. And it's fair. Everybody takes the same test. And this is a test, John, of basic abilities and the ability to work together and collaboratively and cooperatively. And yes, if you're holding a hose, that may not be important, but firefighters do a heck of a lot more than holding the hose. They got to make decisions on saving people's lives.
All right, Paula, good luck to your son. And let's see here. Number two, Kathy, you are next. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to know why nothing has been done to rebuild St. Nicholas Greek Orthodox Church down at Ground Zero.
It's been a bone of contention between the church and the Port Authority, and I've gotten involved mainly because the Archbishop lives directly across the street from me, and he comes out with his staff, and we chit-chat. He doesn't come over to borrow a cup of coffee, but that's okay. And I think they're very close, Kathy, to working with the Port Authority to find a location down there. There was one, I think the church wanted it, but it didn't fit in with the Port Authority plans because it would have interfered with other things. But there will be a new church built down there. And Chris Ward, the executive director of the Port Authority, I know, is working with the Greek Orthodox Church to try to find some ways to get this done.
All right, real fast here. Joel, I've got just seconds. What's your question?
Hi, good morning. My question is, there's a neighborhood in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, at South Aitkenberry, South at 9 and Driggs. There was a shooting that took place on Monday. But before that shooting, there was a few shootings that weekend, on Friday night, on Saturday. There was no cops until the shooting that somebody actually got shot and hospitalized. How come the cops are waiting until this goes so far.
You know, Joe, we try to put cops every place all the time. You can't do that, and you don't want a cop on every corner. Not only can we afford it, it's sort of, you know, at some point in time, you just don't want that many cops around. Cops are doing the best job they can, and let's get the guns out of the hands of criminals, and we won't have this problem.
All right, Mr. Mayor, that's it for you and me for today. We'll do it again on Friday. Have yourself a wonderful weekend, and we will talk with you next week. Same goes for everybody. That's it for the John Gambling Show. Back Monday. Have a good one.